What do you call a bear with no teeth? A gummy bear. Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 150. What a milestone accomplishment! I'm so excited! This is Starting Sustainability, and I am your host, Kaylin Chenoweth. It's time to catch up. I'm so stoked that episode 150 is taking place during October, and this whole month is all about Halloween. And since it's officially Halloween season, I am super excited to announce that we have our costumes picked out. Ish. We recently were gifted a pre-loved book all about sharks. So Corbin wants to be a megalodon, which is a prehistoric shark, significantly bigger than a great white shark. And Cole wants to be a whale shark. Thank you, Pinterest. I was able to find directions on how you can take a hooded sweatshirt and add some felt pieces around the hood, like white ones, to make it look like a mouth. And then you'd add on eyes on the hood and add a fin to the back to convert the sweatshirt into a shark costume. Look, we're up in Indiana. Usually it's snowing on Halloween. By the end of October, it gets pretty chilly. I have learned that we want our Halloween costumes to be warm. And I prefer making our own costumes. One, it's cost effective, and two, it's reusing what you've already got and minimizing waste, which I'm super stoked about. Also, a few weeks ago, I shared a picture in the Facebook group, Starting Sustainability, where you can take two 2-liter plastic soda bottles and paint them black, attach them to your baby's back, and turn them into a scuba diver. Channing and I will be the scuba divers. We're gonna do that to us. Pretty easy, just wear all black, add on the soda bottles like a backpack, a pair of goggles, we're good to go. The only one that's not decided is little baby Hazley, who will be turning 1 next month, so that's crazy. I haven't decided if she is also going to be a baby shark, or if she's going to be something else in the ocean, like a starfish. Mermaid sounds cute, but then she won't be able to walk very well, and she is trying to walk and crawl all over the place. And as I mentioned, it's cold, so mermaid costume isn't usually very warm. She's the only one that I haven't figured out yet. It really depends on what I can find costume-wise at a secondhand store. Last weekend was my birthday, and to celebrate, we went to Fair Oaks Farms. This is a commercial dairy operation in northern Indiana, complete with games, activities, and lots of hands-on learning. The whole family had a blast. At the end, there's about 15 minutes before they close, I said, let's go get some ice cream, because it's a dairy farm and they have ice cream there. And we went over to the Cow Fay, as they cleverly named it, and the line was insanely long. After 20 minutes of waiting with very impatient children, who are tired by now because we've been there all day, I said, let's just hop on the interstate and take the next exit down and go to Dairy Queen. I really want to support local, but it's been 20 minutes and we haven't moved at all in this line. In fact, the line's just grown longer and slower somehow. So we hopped in the car and within minutes didn't even make it to the interstate. 2 out of 3 kids fell asleep. So we just decided to head on home and eat ice cream at home because that was more financially economical and less messy in the minivan. The next day, we baked a homemade cake and processed apples. A lady at church, where we go, has 6 apple trees on her property and invited us to come and pick some. So we brought a 5-gallon bucket and took turns picking apples. The boys had an absolute blast. They enjoyed that very much. Hazley just tried to eat every single apple that she got her hands on, which is fun. And we did that a while ago. I guess last weekend, all of the apples ended up in the refrigerator to preserve them and stop bugs from getting on them. And we finally got to process them this past weekend. We took turns with the little apple peeler, core slicer. It's like a 3-in-1 device. You can get it for, I don't know, $10, $15. The boys enjoyed putting the apples on and spinning it until all the peels came off. And from the white parts of the apple, we made homemade applesauce in the crock pot, which turned out super duper sweet. So the next batch, I'm going to reduce the amount of sugar that we put in there. And the peels and cores and scraps were all boiled with some apple juice in a pan and a whole lot more sugar. And we created an apple syrup for pancakes and yogurt and waffles and all of that stuff. We really love fruit syrups around this house, and we go through them because they're so tasty and delicious. After processing all of the apples and making the cake and enjoying that, we went outside and hung out and played around. And believe it or not, a pigeon just comes walking up to us. Literally just walked right up to us. And we have chickens and they're out in the yard, and we had chicken scratch feed. The boys went and grabbed handfuls of that and held their hands out. The chicken came right up and ate out of their hands. He was a cool little pigeon, very white, light gray, definitely a pigeon, not a dove, because we made sure it's definitely a pigeon, but it was a very light color, very beautiful, friendly fellow. I'm guessing it's a boy. I don't really know. Could be a girl. Very nice. Hung out with us, had two ankle bracelets, one on each leg. And because he wasn't flying, just kept hanging out with us and walking around and not afraid of us at all, we thought, this has clearly got to be somebody's pet. Do people have pet pigeons? I don't know. Let's ask Google. Yes, people have pet pigeons. So now what do we do? We weren't sure, so we called our neighbor, who's a vet tech. He was just like, just let him go free. Like, oh, okay. Well, we'll just monitor and see what happens the rest of the day. So the bird hung out. Eventually, it was bedtime. We all went to bed. The next morning, I was able to see out of our window that we have a kiddie pool that I purposefully added water to. It had been sitting empty for a while. I added water to it just for the bird to have a drink. And he was back, and he was taking a little bird bath and enjoying. And I went out there, was able to take pictures of him again. He was good to go. And then he just took off and flew up into the air, circled around a few times, landed on our roof. Oh, okay, all right. He just hung out with us and observed us. And for the next 3 days, he hung out in our yard. He was in the front yard. He was in our driveway, not afraid of us. The only time that he would get up and fly was when our dog got near him, which Ruger was just really curious and just smelled him, basically. And then he even hung out on our back deck from our bedroom. Channing and I, our master bedroom, you can open up a sliding door to a back deck. And it's a private little balcony. Nobody else can get to it. It's up on the second story. And he was there, tuckered in for the night, just hanging out with us in our sleep. Which is cool and creepy at the same time. After a few days, we did notice there's a whole lot of poop all over the back deck. So he's been hanging out here for a while. I don't know how long, but we observed him 5 days in a row. Dubbed him Secret Agent Ankle Bracelets because we didn't know if he was a spy or a friend. We weren't really sure. So he's been in and out of our lives now for a good 5-6 days. And then disappeared and have not seen him for the last 4 days. A little bit sad, but hope that he has found a new home. Oh, and I also wanted to mention that around the third day, we were like, there's got to be something we can do. So we called DNR, Department of Natural Resources, and asked them, like, what are we supposed to do? And they basically said, you're not going to be able to do anything. We said, we're pretty sure this is somebody's pet. Like, can we take them somewhere to get the chip read or anything? And DNR said, no, there are pigeon clubs. There are people who form clubs and they fly race pigeons. That's a thing. And apparently it's a pretty prominent thing to the point where DNR said, we're not going to come out there. We're not even going to attempt to reunite it with its owner because they're just going to put the pigeon back in the race and it's going to fly off again. Okay. All right. So we just kept putting out food and water for him. Like I said, he hung out 5 days and now he's been gone for about 4 days, which is fine. I guess I'm choosing to believe that he found a new home or he started heading south for the winter. That's what I'm choosing to believe. I wanted to take this moment to give a special shout out to Edward LaDuca because he hopped on the Starting Sustainability Facebook group and shared a post that was really cool on how to store and reuse your bags. You can take your plastic sacks that you get from Walmart or grocery stores, wherever, and stuff them inside of an old peanut butter jar, like the large peanut butter jars, and they'll hold quite a few sacks, and then store it in your car or garage or wherever you may need plastic sacks. And I read that and I thought, wow, that is so cool. And then we got up and started our day. Got the kids ready. We hopped in the minivan. We drove an hour north to a park because we were visiting friends there. On the drive, my kids had bananas and had no place to put the peels. And I thought, oh, dang. I guess we're just going to sit them in the cup holders. As soon as we got to the park, realized we have the dog and the leash, but not poopy bags. Gosh, dang it. Luckily, there was a dog pickup station where they had bags, so we were able to pick up Ruger's poo, which was great because he had three poos. Apparently, he was really backed up that day. After the park, headed home. We ate lunch at the park, but then, you know, kids, they need a snack every 5 minutes. So as soon as we got in the minivan to head home, they wanted another snack. So I busted out the oranges, peeled them all, no place to put the peels. And I thought, man, that's a really good thing. I read that post that Edward LaDuca shared this morning to not have bags today. So as soon as we got home, I immediately went to the little cupboard where we store all those extra plastic sacks that you just somehow magically accumulate. I use reusable grocery bags, but somehow these plastic sacks just keep finding their way into our home, and I save them because I want to reuse them and save the world. So I grabbed an old peanut butter jar because I also save all of those. I have a bunch of those. I grabbed one, immediately stuffed about 20 sacks in there and ran it out to the minivan. And then I gave Edward LaDuca a nice thank you shout out on the Starting Sustainability Facebook group and posted pictures. And if you have not seen that post and this is your first time hearing the story, take time now to do that because you won't regret it. Because there are times in your life, multiple times in one day, where you need a freaking plastic sack and there's none to be found. And this will be your saving grace. I have a quick news update. I saw on Facebook, Disney is releasing a live action of Fern Gully. And it's gonna come out next Christmas, 2024. I remember Fern Gully from when I was a kid. That was released in 1992. I was 6 years old. I don't really remember very much of the plot or the storyline. I just remember seeing it, but I couldn't tell you anything about it or who was in it or what the message was, nothing like that. So I went online to look up some details. That way I could report it correctly to everybody. And it turns out it's all a hoax. Wah, wah. My heart broke. I was really excited about this, but it is false, completely false. The original Fern Gully was released by 20th Century Fox, not even by Disney. But Disney does now own 20th Century Fox, so maybe if we create enough buzz about it, there could be a remake of Fern Gully sometime in the future. In other true news, there is a Frozen podcast from Disney. Yeah, for the first time ever, Disney is expanding their franchise Frozen into the podcast realm, which is pretty cool. And it's starting really soon, October 11th. I'm recording this on October 4th. Happy birthday, Mom. She's 81 today. But the air date of this episode will launch on October 9th. And on the 11th is the release date of the Frozen podcast, which is kind of cool. It's called Frozen Forces of Nature, and it will be 12 episodes long, and it tells a continuing story from where Frozen 2 left off. And its plot is inspired by climate catastrophe, because it talks about the spirits of nature starting to act up, and as a result of mysterious machines that are disrupting the natural order of things, and Anna and Elsa have to figure out how to stop them. I am so excited to check this out and share it with my kids because it's a pretty cool screen-free form of educational entertainment for kids targeting sustainability, which is fantastic. And I'll be honest, Frozen, the movie, came out before I even had kids. I've not actually seen either Frozen 1 or 2, and it's definitely time that I check this out and see what it's all about. And then, after I watch the movies, I'm going to check out the podcast. I'm super stoked. As I said at the top of the episode, it is officially spooky season, Halloween, and I am super stoked. This is my favorite time of the year. I found this topic that we're going to be talking about, and I have been saving it just for the month of October. This is what I would call oddly sustainable. Creepy and oddly sustainable. Basically, it's a really fun, well, scary, story that has a sustainability link. Therefore, it made it to the podcast. I'm going to share it with you now. The sources on today's topic. Basically, this came from an episode of My Favorite Murder, and it was episode 387. I relied on that heavily. That's where I learned about it and heard about it. And then I did do additional research using an article from AtoZAnimals.com and an article from NPS.gov, which is National Park Service. There's also a book titled Night of the Grizzlies by Jack Olson, which is where really a majority of all of this information is coming from. That book is referenced in all of the sources. It's really like the place to go to get all the information. I'm going to give you a semi-brief synopsis, basically, of that book. But if you want more details, definitely check out the book. Again, it is called Night of the Grizzlies, and it is by Jack Olson. Have you ever heard advice on what to do if you encounter a bear? Stay calm, stand your ground, be big, or play dead. The list goes on and on. And really, it depends on the type of bear and if it's an encounter versus an attack on what you're supposed to do. Have you ever wondered, where did this advice come from? Well, that's the story we're going to learn today. This story takes place in Glacier National Park in Montana. If you haven't been, you should probably go pretty quickly because climate change is slowly removing the glaciers. I personally have not been, and this is on my bucket list. One of these days I'll get to go. Glacier National Park is absolutely gorgeous, with spectacular views and home to lots of wildlife, including grizzly bears. These creatures are 7 to 8 feet tall, with claws that are 2 to 4 inches long, so the size of human fingers, and they weigh up to 800 pounds, and they can run up to 35 miles per hour. They climb, swim, and eat everything. In the first half of the 1900s, so we're going way back, the teddy bear was invented. And this was named after Teddy Roosevelt because he was an avid hunter. And between the popularity of teddy bears and friendly bear culture of Yogi the Bear, Winnie the Pooh, corduroy bears, Paddington bears, lots and lots of friendly bears. Basically, bears were not viewed with fear. Remember, at this time, bears were in circus acts and were even roadside attractions. Glacier National Park adopted the culture of loving bears and used this to attract tourists. Tourists would even pose their kids near bears for a photo. Staffers at Glacier National Park would place bait around the lodges to attract the bears so the tourists staying in the lodges would be guaranteed to see bears. And because rangers and park staff were not worried about bears, the visitors were not worried about bears. In the 1940s, we went through World War II. The national parks went into a bit of a decline during wartime. People who worked for the national parks had to really fight to protect them from being stripped down for resources for the war. And once the war was over, the national park director at the time implemented a 10-year plan to staff and improve the national parks. At the same time, Congress passed the Federal Aid Highway Act, which approved creating 41,000 miles of highway systems. By the time we get to the 1960s, national parks are beefed up and there are lots of highways, making it very accessible to them. Camping gear is also updated to being lightweight, inexpensive, and the hobby of camping is really picking up. Part of ramping up of the parks was etching out 700-mile trail system at Glacier National Park. Between camping gear, trails, and highways, Glacier National Park welcomed 1 million visitors a year back in the 1960s. This was great for business, but it also led to mass amounts of people walking through grizzly territory. Also, the anti-litter campaign, that's not going to come into existence until the 70s. Therefore, the 1 million visitors left a lot of trash all over the trails and campsites everywhere. Bears would smell the trash, eat it, and lose their shyness towards people. You can almost sense the buildup at this point. Visitors do start to report encounters with aggressive bears, but it's only a few, and since the encounters are just bites or slashes at a window and not fatal, they are not taken seriously. At the time, 1967, quote, Glacier National Park's animal safety record was significantly better than any zoos in the country, end quote. And that's straight from the book, Night of the Grizzlies. There is a residential area in Glacier National Park called Kelly's Camp. Residents own seasonal homes there. Same year, 1967, a woman reports seeing a bear rifle through her trash can in broad daylight. The woman notes how weird this bear looks. It has a head that is oddly shaped, its face is smashed in, its fur is very raggedy, and it looks like it's starving. When the woman tries to shoo it away by screaming out of her cabin window, the bear just stares back at her. Typically, grizzlies would be shy and skittish around people and take off. But the bear came back repeatedly and progressed to looking inside of the house, and if the bear saw a person in the house, she, yes, it was a female bear, would slam into the side of the house, knocking items off the wall from the impact. This bear is reported by several other people from Kelly's camp with similar instances throughout June and July in 1967. Instead of being afraid of people, this bear was drawn to them. The rangers did not take these reports seriously. Park policy at the time stated, quote, aggressive bears should be killed, end quote, and nothing was done. By August, park rangers informed the residents of Kelly's camp the bear had moved over to Trout Lake and they should not encounter any more troubles. Seriously? So the bear just moved locations. All is good, everybody. For real. At the time, Glacier National Park was seasonally staffed by approximately 850 college-age people running the lodges, kitchens, laundry rooms, gift shops, all of it. It was pretty much an awesome summer job for those who love camping and the great outdoors. For this story, we're going to focus on a group of staffers who became friends. 18-year-old busboy Roy Ducat from Ohio, Julie Helgeson, 19, from Minnesota in the laundry, Paul Dunn, who is 16, also a busboy, 19-year-old Michelle Coons from San Diego, she worked in the gift shop, and brothers Ray and Ron Nosek from Arizona, who were in their early 20s. They were working as a service manager and a waiter, respectively. And the last one is Denise Huckle from Arizona. She was 20 and a room clerk. This group of friends liked to plan weekend excursions at the park. Michelle, Denise, Ray, and Ron all decided to camp out Trout Lake one weekend. They invited Roy and Julie and Paul to join them, but Roy and Julie had been to Trout Lake the previous weekend and decided to go somewhere new. They wanted to go to the Granite Chalet, which was a lodge at the end of High Lane Trail. Paul, the 16-year-old, decided to go with the larger Trout Lake crew. On Saturday, August 12th, 1967, Roy and Julia head out and hike up to Granite Park Chalet. The hike is several hours, and when they get there, it is overbooked and there is not room for them. They decided they really did not want to sleep on the floor of the overcrowded chalet. And it's too far to hike all the way back to the employee bunkhouse. So instead, they settled on hiking about 400 yards away to the nearest campground and stayed there for the night. Roy and Julie knew staff baited the bears for the chalet, so they decided being 400 yards away in the opposite direction of the chalet would be enough to be out of a bear's path. Roy and Julie only had sleeping bags. They didn't bring tents because they had planned on sleeping in the chalet. They started a fire, cooked dinner, and then Roy took the leftover food, walked out into the woods, and chucked it. They put out the campfire and went to sleep. Meanwhile, the other group headed out to Trout Lake, about 8 miles away from the Granite Chalet. Trout Lake, as I had mentioned earlier, is also a grizzly bear hotspot because it is a lake with lots of fish, foliage, and berry patches for bears to snack on. The trail up to Trout Lake sees 700 daily visitors at the time who leave their garbage all over the place, also attracting bears. On the hike to Trout Lake, the group runs into two hikers heading down the trail who reported that they had to climb trees in order to escape an aggressive grizzly bear that they had encountered while they were camping at the lake. They described the bear as female, skinny, with an odd-shaped head. At this point, the bear is known to rip up campsites, chase fishermen, and has sent multiple hikers up trees for safety. For some reason, the group decides to keep going. They set up camp by the lake. Paul goes fishing and catches some trout that they cook over the fire for dinner. As the sun is setting, Michelle spots a bear in the brush heading their way. The group ditches that spot in a hurry and leaves a lot of their supplies behind. They head to another area around the lake and can see the grizzly bear destroy what was left of their campsite. Paul later explains there was a debate on staying or heading back, and it was getting pretty late and they would have to go back the same way where the bear just was, so they decided to stay and tough it out. The group put up a log barrier around the new site for a little bit of added protection. The little bit of food that they do still have, they leave far away from the sleeping area. And throughout the night, they can hear bear grunts, walking, splashing in the lake, obviously keeping them up. But eventually, everyone does fall asleep. Back at the campsite near the chalet, Roy wakes up to Julie whispering to him, "Play dead." That's the most terrifying way to wake up, in my opinion. Then a bear picks up the sleeping bag bound Roy and tosses him about 6 feet away, and then attacks and bites him all over. Bites him on his shoulders, back, legs, everywhere. Later, Roy would say the bear's breath was the most horrible stench he had ever smelled. After a few moments, Roy feels the bear pull away. Unfortunately, the bear doesn't leave. It goes over and starts attacking Julie. Roy reported hearing her screams as she was dragged down the mountainside. Roy is incredibly injured and knows he cannot chase after Julie and a bear in the dark. He miraculously hikes up the trail to the chalet to get help. On his way, he runs into a solo hiker named Don Gullett, who recognizes Roy is severely injured, wraps Roy up in his own sleeping bag, grabs a flashlight and signals SOS up to the chalet. Some of the guests at the chalet have been awakened by the screaming and do see the SOS signals and come out to help. By the time they get to Roy and Don, Roy has gone into shock. Do you believe in miracles? Among the guests at the chalet, there is a nurse, 3 doctors, including a surgeon, and a priest. When Roy is carried into the chalet, he is immediately operated on the dining room table with the first aid supplies that they had. A park ranger radios out for help, and a helicopter is on the way. There were also some incredibly brave guests at the chalet who formed a search party and went out into the dark woods to look for Julie. And they did find her. She was alive. But it was worst case. She was severely mauled all over her body. She has puncture wounds to her chest, and most of her right arm is chewed off. One of the search party members runs to a crew cabin nearby and steals a mattress. They place Julie on the mattress, and they carry her back up to the chalet. The team of medical professionals realize that they couldn't have saved her even in an OR of a major hospital. She had lost almost all of her blood, and the punctures to her chest were too large to close up. The priest, Father Connolly, held Julie's hand as she struggled with her last breath. Father Connolly baptized her with a cup of water from the sink and said the Lord's Prayer. Julie mouthed along with the prayer until she passed away. Julie Helgenson, who was only 19 years old, passed away at 4:12 a.m. on August 13th, 1967, and her death was the first bear-related fatality in the 57 years of Glacier National Park's existence. Another thing to note was the pilot of the helicopter had experience flying in Vietnam. He was able to navigate the peaks and valleys of Glacier National Park in the dark. Also, weeks prior, there were wildfires, and there was a bunch of smoke and haze as well. The pilot had zero visibility, and he was able to fly in, land, and transport Roy to the nearest hospital and save his life. Even though Julie didn't make it, I still want to acknowledge the miracle that lined up during a horrific situation to save Roy's life and to ease the comfort of Julie's death. Sorry to report, but this nightmare is only half over. 8 miles away, at 4:30 a.m., at the Trout Lake campsite, 16-year-old Paul is startled awake by a bear charging at him. The bear stops, stands directly over Paul. Remember, grizzlies are 7 to 8 feet tall, and when you're lying on the ground with only a sleeping bag as protection, that is beyond terrifying. I would say it is perfectly acceptable to wet your pants at this moment. Not saying that Paul did, I honestly don't know, but I'm pretty sure I would. Everyone at the campsite said to play dead. Paul feels the bear bite down on his shoulder. Paul immediately ran out of his sleeping bag, across the campsite, and shimmied up a tree as fast as possible. This did startle the bear, and it went back into the woods temporarily. The bear does come back and heads towards Ron and Denise. They also jump up and run down toward the beach and climb separate trees. Again, the bear heads back into the woods. All three are yelling at Michelle and Ray to get up and get into trees. Ray does this, and they see Michelle is moving in her sleeping bag, and she panically yells back that her zipper is stuck and she can't get out. And the bear comes back, and Michelle is forced to play dead. Everyone watches as the bear comes back. Michelle plays dead, and then she starts screaming, "He's got my arm! My arm is gone!" The bear then drags Michelle in her sleeping bag into the woods. After about an hour, the sun starts to come up and they can see. They climb down out of the trees and run to a ranger station to get help. The rangers, who previously believed bears were harmless, had a very tough time listening to the camper's story of their friend being dragged into the woods and who was still out there because the rangers had just been alerted about the attack up at the chalet. It's mind-boggling to them that there was a second bear attack. The rangers do grab their guns and medical supply kit and hike towards the campsite. They do find Michelle's ripped-up sleeping bag and remains. Michelle Coons was only 19 years old. The four campers are also informed of the bear attacks at the chalet and how their other friend, Julie, was also killed. Just 2 days prior, Paul, the 16-year-old, was in a position to pick which set of friends to go with. Turns out, it didn't matter. He was destined to be involved with a grizzly bear that night, and he was lucky to be a survivor. Glacier National Park officials closed the trails and escorted guests out. Orders went out that any grizzly that feeds near the attack sites was to be killed. And this sadly includes the bears who had been taught over time to go to the chalet for food that was baited for them. Rangers killed 3 adult bears near the chalet. One is an adult female with dried blood on her paws. She is believed to be the one who killed Julie. They think she was aggressive because she had cubs. At Trout Lake, rangers do shoot the skinny bear with an odd head. She is examined, and it is found that she has shards of glass embedded in her molars, a direct result of feeding off of trash. Glass in the molars would have resulted in constant pain, agitation, and an inability to eat normally. A clump of blonde hair is found in the bear's stomach, matching Michelle's hair. It is concluded that the bear who had been reported at Kelly's camp multiple times that summer is the bear that killed Michelle. Do you see the irony and sustainability link? Human trash and lack of respect and understanding of human interactions with wildlife led to this disaster. There are no solid explanations as to why it went from 0 bear attacks at Glacier National Park to 2 in the same night. The best answer is coincidence. News of the bear attacks spread across the nation. Fear of bears attacking does lead scientists to predict the grizzlies slowly being banned and pushed towards extinction. By the 1970s, it does look like the bears may go into extinction. But the good news is, educated authority figures enforce smart decisions. 1973, the Endangered Species Act is passed. This outlawed unauthorized hunting of grizzly bears. Then, state policies aimed at preserving wildlife habitats were also passed. This resulted in keeping humans away from grizzlies as far as possible. Many national parks changed their policies regarding humans and bears. The Glacier National Park Bear Management Plan went from 3 pages up to 50. A lot was added to that one. The measures in this plan include garbage cans are now bear-proof, cooking areas are kept away from tents and cabins, and baiting bears to the lodges was stopped. The National Park Service, NPS.gov, has bear safety guidelines, and I'm going to review them with you now. First, you want to avoid an encounter with a bear. Keep your distance and don't surprise a bear. Most bears will avoid humans if they hear them coming. Pay attention to your surroundings and make special effort to be noticeable if you are in an area with known bear activity or a good food source such as berry bushes. If there is a bear encounter, once a bear has noticed you and is paying attention to you, here's what you do to prevent it from escalating into an attack. First, identify yourself by talking calmly so the bear knows you are human and not prey. Remain still. Stand your ground, but slowly wave your arms. Help the bear recognize you as human. It may come closer or stand on its hind legs to get a better look or smell. A standing bear is usually curious, not threatening. Stay calm. That's going to be the hardest one. Stay calm and remember that most bears do not want to attack you. They usually just want to be left alone. Bears may bluff their way out of an encounter by charging and then turning away at the last second. Bears may also react defensively by woofing, yawning, salivating, growling, snapping their jaws, and laying their ears back. Continue to talk to the bear in a low tone. This will help you stay calm and it won't be threatening to the bear. A scream or sudden movement may trigger an attack. Never imitate bear sounds or make any high-pitched squeals like a high-pitched scream, because that's what a prey animal sounds like. If you have small children with you, do pick them up immediately and tell your children to not scream, don't make any noises, don't make any sudden movements, to just hold still. If you're going to go hiking, travel in groups. Groups of people are usually noisier and smellier than a single person. Therefore, bears often become aware of groups of people at a greater distance, and because of their cumulative size, groups are also intimidating to bears. Make yourself look as large as possible. For example, move to higher ground. Do not allow the bear access to your food. Getting your food will only encourage the bear and make the problem worse for others. Do not drop your pack if you have a backpack on, as it can provide protection for your back and prevent a bear from accessing your food. Some people think that they can just grab food out of their pack and throw it and the bear will chase after it. I'm like, yeah, but they're still going to, they're like, oh, this person gave me food once. I would like food again. So don't do that. If the bear is stationary, move away slowly and sideways. This allows you to keep an eye on the bear and avoid tripping. Moving sideways is also non-threatening to bears. Do not run, but if the bear does follow you, stop and hold your ground. Bears can run as fast as a racehorse, both up and down hills. And like dogs, they will chase fleeing animals. And if they view you as a fleeing prey animal, they are chasing you. Do not climb trees. Both grizzlies and black bears can climb trees, although that is what saved the surviving group of kids at Trout Lake. The overall advice is to not climb trees. Leave the area or take a detour. If this is impossible, wait until the bear moves away. Always leave the bear an escape route. Don't move yourself into a position where you have cornered the bear. That's not going to end well. Be especially cautious if you see a female with her cubs, and never place yourself between a mother and her cub, and never attempt to approach them. The chances of an attack escalate greatly if she perceives you as a danger to her cubs. All of that advice was for bear encounters. If for some reason it does escalate into a bear attack, because bear attacks are rare, most bears are really only interested in protecting food, cubs, or their space. But if it does, for some reason, escalate to a bear attack, Here's what you need to know. First of all, every situation is different. So here's some guidelines for both brown and black bear attacks. Brown bear, grizzly bears. If you're attacked by a brown or grizzly bear, leave your pack on and play dead. This is after you've already tried everything else. If the bear's right there and it's in attack mode, play dead. Lay flat on your stomach with your hands clasped behind your neck. Spread your legs to make it harder for the bear to turn you over. Remain still until the bear leaves the area. Fighting back usually increases the intensity of such attacks. However, if the attack persists, fight back vigorously. Use whatever you have at hand to hit the bear in the face. The target is the face. Black bears. If you're attacked by a black bear, do not play dead. Try to escape to a secure place, such as a car or a building. If escape is not possible, try to fight back using any object available. Concentrate your kicks and blows on the bear's face and muzzle. Again, target area is the face. If any bear attacks you in a tent or stalks you and then attacks, do not play dead. Fight back. This kind of attack is very rare. This is what we just heard about in the story. It's very rare, but obviously can be very serious because it often means the bear is looking for food and it sees you as prey. There are some bear items I want to talk about. A bear bell. When you're backpacking, it's a little bell that you clip on. So every step you take, it rattles and it ding-dongs and it makes a noise. And that way the bear hears you coming and leaves the area. There's also bear pepper spray. This is different than human pepper spray. It's a whole lot stronger. Do know this is not a repellent, so you do not apply it to yourself. You're going to be very miserable. The bear pepper spray is used to stop an aggressive, charging, or attacking bear. So if you see it in the distance, you don't spray. You wait till the bear is in an aggressive state, charging or attacking. That's when you use the pepper spray, because you want to get it right in their face. Now here's a pretty cool fun update. Since 1967, there have only been 10 fatal bear encounters in Glacier National Park. There are approximately a couple million visitors who enter the park every single year. Not all of those people hike the trails, so let's say 1 million people hit the trails in Glacier National Park each year. 1967 was 56 years ago, so that makes 56 million hikers. That puts your odds of being killed by a bear at 0.0000018. Whatever number that is, but that's 0.6018. And that's rounding up. If you follow the guidelines, your odds are very low. If you don't follow the guidelines, well, then Darwinism may take hold. It's time for the challenge. In the last episode, I challenged you to go hiking in the woods. Maybe I should revoke that now. Well, just be smart about it. If you're going to go hiking in the woods, be noisy, have a group of you, be prepared, especially if you're in bear territory. Be aware of your surroundings. Pay attention and be smart about it. Okay, new challenge for this episode. When you see wildlife, do not feed it. If you have trash, do not litter, because that is still feeding the wildlife. And if you see wildlife at all, even if it's a pigeon, don't touch it. Also, if you want something fun to do, the National Park Service is putting on a tournament for Fat Bear Week. That's a thing that I just learned about last night. I literally wrote up this episode, got the script going, kind of figured out what I want to talk about, and then my sister texted me to go vote for Fat Bear Week. And I was like, what the heck is this? This is a real thing. So you go to fatbearweek.org to vote on your favorite fat bear. The contestants are voted on based on how they have bulked up to prepare for winter hibernation. Fat Bear Week is a thing, and go check it out. It's from October 4th through the 10th. And this episode is airing on the 9th. So by the time you're hearing this, that means you have one day left to go vote. So go check it out. The next episode will be on October 23rd, continuing on with Halloween and spooky season. It will be focusing on another creepy sustainability story, The Origins of Mummy Brown. Not sure what that is? Well, come back on October 23rd and hear all about it. Until then, continue saving the world and stay spooky. Bye.